Welcome to Doctor's Orders with your host, Dr. Baker. Now let's join today's program.
Hello, everybody. What a wonderful, wonderful Tuesday, which you know that we call Tech Tuesday. We're excited today to have our guest, Perry Jeter, which we'll introduce here in a moment. But joining us on the show allows us to be able to offer treatment to business owners everywhere. And we can do it in a number of sessions, a number of ways. If you're listening and you need assistance with your business, you want to join the conversation, you can do so at 859-291-2255. Once again, that's 859-291-2255. We're also live streaming at drbaker.us/doctor's orders. But please join the conversation. We're really excited to have our guest today as we're going to talk technology as we typically do on Tuesdays. Before we jump into the conversation, I want to just bring up how just kind of looking at where we are in our climate. You know, we got realities of fuel prices. People are bothered by the economy as a whole with inflation. Well, I was having a conversation earlier today regarding autonomous vehicles and what that means on a global scale. And as a business owner, I think sometimes small business owners, and as a reminder definition, 50 million and under 500 employees or less, we run away from technology because we're uncertain of the cost, we're uncertain of how to integrate them. But when I was thinking about autonomous cars and I was thinking about cars that are battery powered, it's not about just the personal choice of having these types of vehicles. I was thinking more about what is the effect on the small businesses for those that have a small catering company or those that might have a retailer? Is that now how has transportation been changed based on technology? How do we look at battery-powered items as opposed to fuel and what that does to the overall landscape of how we live? It's really a paradigm shift on our relationship with technology, what we embrace, what we reject, and then how we integrate that into our work. And even as we talk with our guest today, I want you to keep in mind that our relationship with technology has to be something that's nurtured, something that is deliberate and intentional. So therefore, we understand the benefits of how to integrate new technology in our work and in our lives, and then understanding where our risks come from. So therefore, we can see problems when they arise and we protect ourselves in ways that allow our business to remain healthy. But without further ado, I'm going to bring in Perry Jeter. He's the owner of Jet Fuel Tech, which is an international tech company. Perry Jeter is not just an owner and not just a serial entrepreneur, but he's an inventor. He's one of those individuals that I've had the pleasure of working with for years and in various capacities. And it is amazing some of the things that he comes up with that he brings to us from all around the globe. So without any more, Perry Jeter, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for joining us. How you doing today?
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Dr. Baker. I really appreciate it and excited to be on the show as usual and looking forward to working together in collaboration on the big event coming up in Texas here real soon.
Fantastic, fantastic. So before we jump right in, just tell the audience a little bit about you, why I think you're amazing, so therefore they can know that you're amazing, and then what Jet Fuel Tech is all about.
Absolutely love to. Thank you for the intro. So just a serial entrepreneur. Have two exes behind me. We're now working on fall detection with elderly population. It started out eradicating MRSA and staphylococcus in hospitals. Walter Reed Medical Center in Northern Virginia exited that company. And then my father, former NFL player, started getting kind of having some episodes of forgetfulness, if you will, at that time, and ended up being traumatic brain injury and concussion. So started on a deep dive into looking at medicines and wearable technologies, body-worn sensors, and developed some partnerships with the United States Air Force, to Nike, to Under Armour, and hosted at several events, NFL Hall of Fame, in collaboration with Dr. Baker and his group, and just excited about the future and solving some of the supply chain issues that are out there today through wearable technology.
Fantastic. Now, you mentioned a term that I want to make sure the audience is aware of, and you talked about exit. And so just for definition purposes, and you created companies literally from scratch, and then you were able to essentially choose your method of walking away, which in the tech space, we call that an exit. And then that is a measure of success. One, congratulations to that. But number two, how difficult of a task is it to create something, build it, grow it, scale it, and then eventually be able to get out of it in a way that fits the terms in which you set out for yourself?
Yeah, great question. It's ebb and flow, right, of entrepreneurship and small business and economics and the in the world of, you know, finance. So, you know, and the dot-com booms kind of set all this up, and we were able to ride that wave and be innovative. But it's a daunting task, you know, days, nights, internationally, being on India, China, you know, different time zones in different parts of the world, supply chain, and getting product into the to the United States, and going through the tariffs and sleepless nights and mistakes all the way around. So, you know, it's definitely had its ups and downs, but I wouldn't have it either any other way. And, you know, being, you know, cutting our teeth on these kind of wearable devices.
Well, let's talk about the first time that you created a company, and I'm going somewhere with this for later in the show. But what was your first invention or your first concept or creation?
The first one was a product called String Guard. And the String Guard was actually licensed through MLB, Disney. Ironically, our biggest one turned out to be SpongeBob in Canada. That was a run from about 2006 to 2012. 14 years later, I'm still receiving royalties from that benefit. And it's really becoming a real big deal. So yeah, that was my first one.
Well, I want to stop there for a moment because you say something that's really interesting. And for my audience out there, you know, there was a movie that had come out, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, straight out of Compton, and storytelling about the legendary, you know, rap band, if you will, N.W.A., Dr. Dre, and those guys. And it was unique when they were telling the story as to when they got discovered. You know, the record executive said, "Hey, we want to sign you to our records." And the group had never heard of the record company and said, "Well, you kind of don't hit our target." And they said, "Well, we represent, you know, the California Raisin." And, you know, they laughed at that. And they said, "Yeah, but the California Raisin sell millions and millions upon, you know, songs every single year," which had completely dwarfed anything that they had ever considered. Well, I took the time to tell that story because when you made the String Guard, and I'm just guessing based on subjectivity here, I don't think that you went into your business plan and said, "We're going to go north of the border and sell these, and we're not also going to go and target SpongeBob as the imagery that we wanted." But it turned out to be a really good collaboration, partnership, or a client, if you will, however it is you deem that relationship. But it turned out to be really successful for you. Is that right? I need to make sure that Perry Jeter's still there. Perry, you still with us?
Yes, sir. I'm sorry. That is a perfect example and representation of, to your point, the California Raisins. Dude, that's outstanding. That's outstanding intel. But you're right. I didn't go into it thinking, you know, because we were pushing the NFL, the NBA, and Under Armour even, you know, and, yeah, we're going to do this, and we're going to run this, and we're going to do this. And it ended up being north of the border, and it ended up being SpongeBob. And it's like, wow. Like, there's no way you could – you know, so to your point in supporting your point, your theory, and for the audience, you never know, you know, your consumer's going to drive your market, your consumer's going to drive everything that you have that you're putting together. So, you know, your consumer, you may have an idea, but the consumer's going to be the one to put that in a demand. So, no, that's a great point.
So then you took those experiences and you were able to duplicate those efforts. Now that you're at Jet Fuel Tech, you talked about some wearable devices. You talked about technology, even doing things overseas. Kind of tell us a little bit more, some detail about some of the specialty items that you guys have or that you develop, and then what makes this technology so special?
Yeah, great question. And leading to that, you're exactly right. So during that time of the run of the String Guard, got my first letter of intent for a 7-figure deal to acquire String Guards and a royalty deal. During that time, I embedded some chip technology into it and tracking missing and exploded kids and tracking coal miners who had been in an accident in a coal mine. So from there, we really, really looked at technology, right? So, and that was my first entry into technology, and then it just took off from there to wearable devices. Now our focus is fall detection with seniors and elders, right? So you have, you know, there's this massive movement of peers, personal emergency response systems. We're geofencing, and we're putting all these different accelerometers, gyroscope, magnetometers in these devices, location services, so elderly people, you know, can actually be tracked by their loved ones, even if they're in a nursing home. So working with the senior aging right now population, veterans get two of these devices for free. So I think, you know, we want to really get to the veterans community, VA medical centers, and start getting these devices to them. They're paid for by the government for free for them. Most of them do not pay for these devices with your typical insurance. But what makes it most exciting and what makes it just so innovative is we actually have a voice activation to it. So not only if you fall, you know, and you have this, you know, Mary or Jim or someone, they fall and they can't get up and they can't push the device, but more importantly, they can get there to be able to get help right away by audio and voice cues.
So let's look at that, because you came out of Stream Guards, you then changed directions and said, hey, I want to jump into the technology space. At this point, you guys have technology that are really helping the elderly, helping out people with disabilities. You're looking at individuals that serve the country, but this technology is really good for anyone that has any of these types of ailments that you mentioned. Talk to me about the evolution of thought when it comes to what type of wearable that you're going to develop or how to create a company around technology. What is that thought process like when you're jumping to create a company such as this to compete in a space that for many people just seems very difficult to get into? How do you go about doing that at the level? I mean, whether you want to tell us through experience or whether you want to tell us through just kind of some staples of business that are just really good common practices. How did you go about doing that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we really looked at partnerships. We followed the models of the successful businesses, right? Dell's, the Xerox, you know, disruptive businesses, Nike's, you know, entry into the market and, you know, signing, you know, Michael Jordan to a contract that propelled them out of the running business to, you know, a marketing company, literally, you know, it's a marketing program and branding. So we did that in partnership with Lenovo. We did that in partnership with NTT Data, you know, multi-trillion-dollar company that you had the pleasure of working alongside of me with, you know. So to get those are once-in-a-lifetime opportunities. Those are dreams for young African-American men from the, you know, from the projects, you know, to be with multi-trillion-dollar companies. It's almost unheard of. We're like, you know, 0.0001% in the world population that have those kind of opportunities. So what we want to do is bring that mentorship and share these opportunities, internships, and bringing in folks from the University of Cincinnati, your alma mater, West Virginia, you know, Rich Rod, where I played football. So we want to bring kids from the communities and the inner cities to have the opportunity to work on our watches as we innovate. We got blood pressure, SpO2, steps, you know, but everyone's buying the Apple Watch. But here you have a prominent African-American male who's created these watches and devices, and we want to share that with our communities, you know, because we need to do a better job in our communities of high blood pressure, diabetes, you know, exercising, and, you know, heart disease, which really runs rapid and prevalent in our communities, in African-American communities. So it's really, really big for us to be able to do those things. So in my opinion, I really want to be able to take this showcase and share this with the world and catapult these opportunities in collaboration with your group, Dr. Baker.
Well, you got one thing that you mentioned, and you talked about partnerships. You had already done business at a level that allowed you to, number one, to have experience and gain experience, figure out what your niche might be, but number two, earn success at a high level to where you can look back and create a roadmap for future opportunity. Well, in this case, technology is a product just as lemonade is a product. But in that case, how do you create your business as the separator? Talk to the listeners a little bit about just understanding the foundation of business principles. And then if you don't mind, share an example of how those basic principles were able to push your business forward. So whether it's about, you know, legalities and maybe your legal team, or maybe it's about fundraising and what you had to do that, or maybe it was how you created the partnerships. Talk to us a little bit about how the foundations of business have been able to transfer to your tech company now.
Yeah, so those are really great leading questions. So we were able to do that in a way that propelled our company to that next level, you know, because we were really, you know, really involved from the ground up, right? So I mean, we put these things into place. We started out in the place where the Nikes of the world, the Trey Burks, you know, some of those folks came along. But, you know, my father really laid the foundation with me and taking me to a lot of different places, you know, universities where, you know, he spoke at. He's a teacher, and I work for the federal government. So just having those foundations and watching them do their thing growing up. My father was an entrepreneur. I didn't even know it. He was working, had me working, and, grabbing trash and having a second job as a teacher. So for him, it was, you know, it was second nature. For me, it was totally, you know, foreign, you know, but I didn't recognize it until later on.
Well, I think in this case, you know, what we're talking about now, technology, global innovation, to the average business owner, whether it's a micro or boutique business owner, whether it's a mom and pop shop, you might be looking and saying, well, I don't work in those ways. I don't have a technology that might be considered disruptive. I don't have something that the world hasn't seen before. I have a static product or commodity that everyone has seen or has used before. Well, I think what's a good takeaway is that there's opportunity in places that many times may not be seen. I'd like to make really the highlight that a lot of what you've been able to do has come from practical places. You know, you talked about the shoestring guard. Well, what was your inspiration or the muse for creating the shoestring guard?
The reason I created the shoestring guard was out of necessity. That was because of literally was running, you know, training, you know, for football like we do. And I was tripping over the shoestrings, right? And I'm thinking to myself, there's got to be some way I can, you know, tie these up and not have to go through this. And that was an invention out of necessity. And it went from shoestring guards to on a sweatshirt and, you know, then a decorative piece. You know, we did the pink campaign with breast cancer awareness. We did those, you know, partnerships with Under Armour. Adidas was a big one. University of Michigan was sold in the MDN and those places, Michigan State University. So, yeah, it was born out of necessity, definitely.
So that's born out of necessity. Then you transition forward, and now you're into wearable technology. What's the inspiration there? We talked about your father and the ailments that he had, but you are not classically trained in the realm of medicine to say, well, you know what I'm going to invent is this. So how does a person that's not traditionally trained in something that has a company, has a product, has a commodity, and they're thinking about technology in ways, and maybe they want to become a startup founder and, you know, transition from a company that they're currently in. Well, what's the mindset that you had to have as you transitioned and said, my inspiration now is, you know, this, and the product that I want is that, and the way I'm going to service my audience is this way. How does that whole thing materialize for you?
Yeah, so for me, it was, to your point in question there, it was, you know, born out of necessity because I was literally watching my father suffer from dementia and Alzheimer's, traumatic brain injury, and started taking him to appointments to neurologists where they simply said, hey, you know, you seem like a real motivator. You got a durable medical background. Would you be interested in working with us, and this was the neurologist at Ohio State University. So I took that invitation, started looking at some different things, and really started out with devices around. They wanted to see if they could on the brain and what was going on with these sensors. So we had additional sensors. We had disruptive technology that we put on there to see that we put on there. So they, that was the start of it, right?
But now when you say that these disruptive technologies, what I'm trying to push toward is that did you go into a lab and have to invent them? Did you seek out products that you could then either absorb or acquisition? Or what was the process to say, you know what, there's a need here. How do I fill that need? Or the sense that I want to give the audience is how things can be birthed in ways that maybe aren't ways that they're traditionally thinking about.
Yeah, so I was able to do that. Interesting you asked that, because that came initially through the laboratories, right? So the laboratory, that lab work that we were doing and looking at the cells. And I was eradicating MRSA and staphylococcus from hospitals, but to your point, I wasn't building a wearable device, and if you could, in that sense, I wasn't doing that. So I was able to look at some of the stuff over in Switzerland and Germany and abroad and look at these different technologies, because these doctors and neurologists had access to this information. So they shared the information with me, and the next thing I know, I was being whisked up to the United States Air Force Academy in Dayton, Ohio, and looking at their human performance laboratories and looking at devices that they had tested before, pre and post, and share some of that information. So that was a pretty big deal. So yeah, that was a combination of those two.
All right, fantastic. And so what I'm seeing here is that taking information and then making good use of information based on your skill set, your available resources, things you have experience with, all of those things create the opportunity for you to pivot, adjust, or participate in technology in a way that maybe has not been realized previously. And that's one of the messages that I want the listeners to hear, is that they might be working on something or working in a way, and then all of a sudden necessity comes. And when that necessity comes, you might have the wherewithal to bring a new product to market, or you might have the wherewithal to partner, because you might be the yang to someone else's yin. Right. And all of a sudden another company has been birthed from there. There's a company here in Cincinnati that we've done really good work with in the past, and the company's called Zoozler, and they birthed a company out of Zoozler called Fisna, and Fisna ended up becoming the largest 3D imagery portion of Google. Yeah. And reason why that's important is that they didn't invent Fisna for that reality, but the technology was so good and Google had a need that all of a sudden what they created became a filler and a remedy for the need of one of the largest entities globally. And that's what we're saying as a business owner, is that your opportunities exist in and around you at all places. And so because of that, you have to, if you're embracing technology, or you're open to the idea of adjusting how your business works, or looking at a new market opportunity, that if you are deliberate and intentional about your movement, intentional about the things that you experience, now you can bring that to fruition. But that's also assuming you have the skill set to do so. In your case, Barry, is that once again, you are not the medical genius behind your devices that you guys have at Jet Fuel Tech, meaning that you were not in a laboratory inventing them, but you had the wherewithal to partner and collaborate to bring these technologies to the world in a very meaningful and significant way that now is helping people better their lives. Is that right?
100%. 100%. Spot on.
Right. So in here, talk to the audience a little bit about what have been some of the challenges with working with technology or trying to create a tech company what have been some of the biggest barriers or obstacles you faced that maybe someone else that may want to embark in, you know, the direction of technology that they may run into, or things that maybe you underestimated that became a little bit larger once you tried to execute?
I think the first one, especially for minorities in this space, minorities, women in minorities by definition, race or ethnic background, has been the access to capital. That's our biggest barrier, you know, understanding how venture capital works, getting into the venture capital space, understanding what that looks like from a return on investment for your investors too. So that's really, at the end of the day, where, you know, where we saw the biggest challenges.
So when we're talking access to capital, is that out of something that is what I would say something that the minority should traditionally have, or are they in the right rooms to obtain it, or are the companies not developed enough to be able to take advantage of it? Where's the biggest issue that you've seen based on your experience?
Yeah, I think that the biggest issue is that our counterparts will get 10 times the opportunity to make the mistakes. We get one, right? So you got one hiccup, a bad part, a bad design, or a bad function, where, you know, after that one, then there's no follow-along capital. There's seed capital. There's an initial capital expenditure investment. But then the follow-along capital to expand on that, to make the actual company grow and grow through those growing pains like every other company does. I mean, even, you know, every great company was at a standstill. You know, Nike was, you know, he was selling, you know, out of his back of his car. I mean, everything, you know, Amazon as we know it. So, you know, to be given multiple opportunities to be successful is what we're asking, you know, in that follow-along capital. Those are some of the key indicators that barriers that I've seen.
Well, you know, one thing that I tell people regularly is that businesses fail for a myriad of reasons, but the top two reasons that businesses fail of any type is that they're undercapitalized, meaning they just flat out don't have enough money, or they don't have the right team. Their human capital is insufficient, meaning that the people that they have running the company are not necessarily equipped to do so. And that's at any level, whether it's a two-person company or a 2,000-person company, the humans can cause falter. But based on what you're discussing at this moment, is that having access to capital is vital to the long-term sustainability plan of any company. And in this instance, I tell business owners, what is your money plan? You know, we on Fridays, we go through Financial Friday. And just as Joe Faison, our chief strategist, came on here, he talked about this a week ago, but having the right pro forma, understanding the right budget, determining what's considered your ramp up, your break even, how much runway do you have? These are things that the average business owner may not spend time doing specifically, and that becomes very difficult and challenging even for a startup founder. So in this instance, there will come a time that your company will need an infusion of capital, whether that's coming by investment or whether that's coming by debt financing. Somewhere along the way, you're going to need additional dollars in order to catapult the company and push that thing forward. And what I'm hearing you say is that your experiences have deemed that it's been difficult to obtain investment dollars in some instances, because the reality is you have to be really good if you're a minority, and partly is because you're kind of new to the game, if you will. You're new to the space. Am I correct in saying that, or am I missing the mark?
Well, I think it's the latter of the two. The first part you said in referencing the knowledge in, you know, that whole financial piece where you gain knowledge in raising capital, right? So that was where, you know, the passion's there, the work ethic, you know, the long hours, and, you know, all those things are prevalent. But the space that, you know, I think that was the greenest was, you know, thinking that you were going to have that follow-along capital. And then when it doesn't happen, it's like a, you know, it's you know, it's literally you know, like you're being yanked from, you know, your feet, you know, and it's like the rug's being pulled from under you at that point. Now you're in scramble mode. Now you're trying to figure out, what to do next, right? So you go from this opportunity that looks great, that looks promising, to, you know, now there's nothing that you can do to get to that next level. So that is really the biggest thing that I've seen, you know, from a capital raising perspective.
Right. I want to sit on that point. We're going to take a quick station break for a moment, but I want to come back to that point. This segment today of Tech Tuesday is brought to you by Pro Elite Training. Once again, Patton on how to train athletes through the metronome of music to increase rhythm, tempo, and pace. That's Pro Elite Training. The word pro, the word elite, one word, training. You can find it on the web at getproelite.com, or you can find it in your Play Store or within your Google Store. It's simply Pro Elite. Train alongside NBA athletes such as Trey Burke and Jordan Seibert, or NFL athletes such as long-term pro Brandon Tate or Devontae Harris. And so in that case, you can increase your speed, you can increase your rhythm, you can increase how you dribble the ball, how you do a back pedal, all through Pro Elite. It is a freemium model, meaning that there's hundreds of drills for free. Download Pro Elite Training today. So back to your point, Perry Jeter. We've got Perry Jeter of Jet Fuel Tech here with us, international tech company. Is you're talking about fundraising and how to go about fundraising, and there's multiple stages of fundraising, which if no one's ever gone through it, you've got your friend and family round, you've got seed rounds, you've got, you know, Series A, Series B, and a lot of times these words get confusing to people that don't live in the space. But they actually have an identity attached to them. So when you go to speak to, let's say, a venture capitalist or an angel investor, if you go to, you know, let's call it an accredited investor, and you even have non-accredited investors that, you know, maybe a person, and this is not a game or a gimmick, a person has won the lottery or received an inheritance from a death, and they're looking to park their dollar somewhere, and all of a sudden here comes your company and you have a need of $100,000, $200,000 in order to develop your technology or to increase your marketing, you might have a scenario where you're soliciting, you're having a fundraiser, if you will, to bring those dollars in. And what we're talking about, listeners, is in some cases how difficult that is when you're not trained at doing it. But number two, how difficult it is when you simply don't have the network for it. Perry Jeter, if you don't mind, talk to us a little bit about how important a network has been for you, whether it's been through fundraising, whether it's been through capitalizing on opportunity, or whether it's been on how to get to the next stage of your business.
Yeah, that's a really good point. The network is, you know, as important as the venture funding, right? So, and getting to that venture funding, what's through your network of, to your point, you know, John Smith, you know, just got, you know, 100 grand park that he wants to diversify his portfolio and, you know, put up 25 grand and see his money, you know, grow. So that's a great point in that your network is really, in my opinion, I mean, that's probably second. That's a really good point. So your network is going to take you to some of those meetings, get you in some of those doors. Anthony Munoz was a great mentor and business partner. You know, opened up some doors with the NFL Hall of Fame and Under Armour, you know, by, you know, two phone calls, you know. So that's a great example. But yeah, that's a great point. That's a really integrative part of that network and adding an advisor to your team, right? So you may be able to pay them quarterly, but their network, you know, if you get one good shot, if Under Armour was to say, hey, you know, we want to buy you for $10 million, you know, that network was more important and more valuable than the actual venture capital itself.
Well, someone out there might be listening and say, well, I don't know that many people in the space that I'm in, would like to go into. I would like to aspire to venture into the tech space as a tech company. I've got a great idea or I've got a great design, but, you know, I only know a few people. Or my network has been totally in the food and beverage industry, but I'm seeking to transition into another one. So the network that I've built for 25 years doesn't bode well for me when I go to transition. What do you say to that reality, and how does someone break through from having a circle that may not be conducive for where they're going, and then break into another circle with doors that help push what it is that they're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think in that sense, you know, you want to really look at, because sometimes even diversify. So, you know, I met an engineer from Coalescence that just sold his company for, you know, millions of dollars. But, you know, he was looking at and doing currently at that time seasonings, right? Coalescence seasonings. And we were doing, but he still had some of the engineering supply chain pain points, right? So it can be in different backgrounds. It can be in different verticals, but some of the same experiences and pain points. And he was able to help us solve two critical issues just through the supply chain piece. So I think there's some diversification there as well.
Well, when we talk about diversification of your human capital, as a business owner, you have to put yourself out in ways that allows you to meet others, especially when you're talking, one, if you're a startup founder, right? That is paramount, and I'm going to talk about that in a moment. But two, if you're a current business owner and you're seeking how to expand your business, how to play in a different space, you're going to have to expand your network base, who you're in front of, and really diversify your human capital. I want to go back to the startup founders, if you will, is that I have worked for many accelerators, innovation hubs, incubators, and when I work with those entities, a lot of times you'll see companies that are seeking to start that are coming from someone that maybe is an introvert,
right?
Or maybe was really good at the one thing that they're called to do, but now what they're called to do is bigger than a side-off product or project, and it needs to be a company. From a tech standpoint, now they are charged with being a CEO, when in reality, they're not even a COO, they're more of a CIO. You know, they're the chief innovation officer if
right.
That company was larger. They're not equipped to be a CEO, but to grow that network, you would have to be a CEO. So in that instance, what has your experience been, even with your personal team, as you built out that team? What are some of the things you've had to do to either get the company off the ground, shake new hands, or meet new people? What have you personally had to do that would be a good story for the audience to hear as it relates to how you had to put yourself out there in a way to make sure that you were visible and that awareness was available for what you were creating?
Yeah, I got a great story on that one. Yeah, we really, during our time of selling the string guards at its peak, we were in between rounds. And Franz Pago, my business partner, and I, we were at the time living in Morgantown, living in a nice condo. But we were short on cash, and we were moving people. So we were going out, we were taking jobs, we were moving people, and, you know, two guys in a van, you know, and literally moving people. So we did that for, I think a couple of weeks. We then got another round of funding. And then went to celebrate one of the places, and one of the guys recognized us. Hey, man, you guys just moved us, and we were in there popping bottles. It was great. So yeah, so we put ourselves way out there, man. We were moving people, and you know, whatever had to be done to get everything done. But yeah, that was a great story.
It is, you know, and I would say that, and this is a story between you and I, is you invited me to. It was a private gathering of individuals from overseas, you know, over in Asia.
Yeah.
And they came to the U.S. for a summit, and they wanted to see products that they didn't have access to over in Asia. And this was, I don't know, Perry, maybe 4 or 5 years ago when we did this, maybe less. But I know it was pre-pandemic. But I know for me, being in that room with a couple of those individuals, especially the director, being in the room with the director privately, and not understanding exactly what his angle was going to be was a little challenging, because we were dealing with cultural differences. We were dealing with language barriers. He had no reference of our technology, and I had no reference of his interest level. And so as I'm looking to fish through that to say, we've got something that we think is special, we know that he's looking for something special. That was about the only thing that I could stand on to create dialogue. And when you create a tech company, a lot of times, or really a startup founder of any type, hopefully you listeners are understanding, is that you might end up in a room having to explain your company or your product or your team in a way that has to appeal to a diverse group of individuals. And if I go back to one of the words that you used earlier was strategic partnership, is that sometimes you might be looking for investment. Sometimes you're looking for a strategic partner. Other times you might be looking for a customer. And so how you talk about that business and what you do in that room or the rooms that you're invited into becomes important. So every single interaction is a very vital interaction, and you have to treat them as precious cargo and understand what you're doing, understand the problem if you're solving one, or the entertainment value if you're bringing it, or the convenience factor that you may be offering to your business. So when it comes to Jet Fuel Tech, you know, one of the things that you guys pride yourself on is that you're going to remain in a space of innovation. You know, talk to me about some of your, what I'm going to call continuing ed, because I'm not looking at this from formal training, Perry Jeter, but you seem to be in the know of technologies that haven't been developed fully yet that's coming out, or summits that are being thrown to where you can get into them to see where the technology is going. Talk to me about what do you do outside of that, or even including that, that keeps you aware of your space so that you can stay on top of it so that Jet Fuel Tech can compete.
Yes, this is...
Now, when you're looking to compete, what does that look like when you're continuously educating yourself and saying, you know, I have to learn this, I have to do this, I have to be here in order for Jet Fuel Tech to be recognized as a player in the space? What are some of the things that you do to keep Jet Fuel Tech on the cusp?
Innovation and partnerships, you know, going to areas where, you know, where we're talking to kids, we're talking to folks that are innovative and do partnerships and innovation, and they keep us young, they keep us active and, you know, and in the game. So, you know, that's the biggest thing right there.
I mean, I've heard you travel all over. I mean, there's times when I'm speaking with you, you're in Colorado or you might be in California. You know, how do you, you know, when you go to these trips, or sometimes are you lost in those rooms, or do you command those rooms? Is it always the opportunity to talk about the technology, or is it more about learning what other people are doing in the space of technology to improve your company's technology?
I'm sorry, Dr. Baker, say that one more time. I lost you there briefly.
Yeah, no worries. No, I was saying that when you're, I've heard of you traveling from, you know,
yes,
Colorado at times,
yes,
California at other times, and,
yes,
and you're in those rooms, you're seeing technology, but you're also looking to see how to make your technology better.
Yes.
And what I'm curious for the audience to hear is, how does a company take what it is that they believe that they're good at while looking at other technology and then making declarations on how either what it is that you're seeing can bolster what you have, or how do you navigate in your space to create really a point of differentiation so that your technology can stick
right
out in a room or in a crowd of an industry that is producing innovation every day?
Yes. We are on the cusp of that, and that's through those partnerships, NTT Data's, and, you know, in Dallas for this upcoming event that we're going to be at, Sports Medicine Conference. So we're going to be in a lot of rooms and places where, you know, they'll be looking at us as innovative, but we're also examining their innovation and what they have as well.
And so when you're looking at innovation, you know, innovation can come in a host of ways. We've
right
got technical
right
innovation, you've got social innovation.
Right.
Process innovation. Innovation
right
is not just one aspect. Is that a formalized process inside your company? Do you allow those things to happen organically? Is
yeah,
it
organically
simply because you have
yeah
exposure? How do you guys
yeah
go about doing that?
Yeah, organically mostly has been the most impactful. I think, you know, once if it's forced or doesn't feel organic and it doesn't feel like it's, you know, coming from a place of just, you know, organic, you know, I mean, just literally, you know, just going through the process. But the successful ones have been organic, and with the Nikes and Under Armour, and those relationships have matured. And then when these guys are going to other places, even when I did the String Guard, I did the deal with Skechers and was out there at, you know, California, you know, and with them, and that was just a whole nother ordeal. But then that guy, he left Skechers and went somewhere else, Mandel, and, you know, we ended up doing another deal. guys with Converse, you know, once they sold and went bankrupt and got bought back by Nike. D-Wade came back, and he was one of the featured athletes, to Liaoning in China with some folks. So, you know, we've been really, you know, fortunate and blessed the past, 20 years to be in this game. And, you know, starting out, like you said, just some humble beginnings of eradicating MRSA and staphylococcus from hospitals and helping, keeping those rooms clean and healthy.
How big did that become, if it was at all, during the COVID scenario, when you're looking at some of the solutions you had? You know, obviously you're helping with, you know, reading detection of, you know, body function. But did the company, you know, were you able to grow during that time? Was it more standstill? Did it go in revival?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, had to pivot. Yeah, we had to pivot like a lot of companies are, because no one paid for pandemic insurance, right? No one anticipated this happening, right? So with that being said, you know, that was like the biggest curveball to everyone, and it had a ripple effect, you know, to folks, you know, closing down their arenas, right? Yeah, they have TV revenue through the next 5, 7, 10 years, and they're being paid on those, but still, you know, not having revenue at the turnstalls and buying $20 beers, it has an effect on your bottom line, your EBITDA. So with that being said, they weren't buying additional products or shirts or wearables that were, you know, tens of thousands of dollars. They were looking at, you know, things that were ancillary that's going to keep their product on the floor, and over masks and sanitizing wipes and those things. So we pivoted gloves, and we got into that space to maintain our relevance, to continue to, you know, support our clients, Denver Broncos, and, you know, some of the clients out there, you know, the NBA, we got the mask deal with them. So it was really a big pivot for us, but we maintained a relationship with the folks we had.
Well, I think in that case, I'm hearing something that I think is very important for the listeners to know. As a prescription that I'm writing to you all, is that remaining relevant is vital for your business and the overall health and success of your business. If your customer base or your client base, and in my case, my patients, forget that I exist, then that is literally a way in order for you to experience death to your business. You have to stay in front of them and provide value as you stay in front. Just to say, hey, I'm here, is not good enough. You have to do something that allows them to continue to want to engage with you or satisfy a need that they may have. You know, we talked about the pandemic a second ago and how you guys had to pivot. One thing that was beneficial for the business hospital is we understood the pandemic because we have a hospital, a business hospital in the Philippines. So being placed in Asia gave us an understanding of what this epidemic could bring. So we started to think about solutions immediately, and I offered disaster relief services in early March, even before it was considered a pandemic here in the States. What that did, Perry Jeter, for us was that it allowed us to stay in front of our current patients and offer them more treatment, but then it got us in front of countless patients that did not even know that a business hospital was real. And the biggest benefit that really came with that is that the United States of America came out and offered EIDL loans, EIDL, so economic injury disaster loans. The world had not even seen their world as an injury. So it was a benefit to us because we were able to point to the United States government and say, even the government is calling it an injury. And here we are, the only business hospital offering disaster relief services to assist you with that injury. And that kept us relevant. It allowed us to provide value. And we're saying the same thing in the tech space, is that you then had the ability through e-commerce and other channels to stay relevant while your technology had to morph and change some. So you guys had the wearable shirt technology. Now your flagship product is the wearable watch. Is that right?
It is. You're 100% right. So, yeah, where we have so much interest in the fall detection is and the cooling tech. So Biden administration just committed billions of dollars to cooling technology. We're meeting with Worthington Steel tomorrow to present the cooling technology, the hat in the wristband, but we also have a vest. But, you know, there's more than 50 workers that have died, you know, from heat exhaustion and with this whole heat wave going on right now. But what's more important is during the studies we've seen is we've seen this trajectory in injuries, bad, you know, mistakes and bad, you know, opportunities that turn out to be injuries that are caused by others. And then, you know, it's got a snowball effect to $99 billion taxpayers' money because, you know, they're going into these rehabilitation programs. So we're looking at Worthington Steel. We're looking at Toyota, places where there's plants and they have heating and they're, you know, we have a helmet, push a button, and it cools your core body temperature. So that was developed in partnership with MIT and the Corey Stringer Institute. So,
well, let's talk about that for a moment because you talk about the Corey Stringer Institute. Our audience needs to be educated on who Corey Stringer was and why he's relevant and why your company would even attach to that.
Yes, Corey Stringer, former athlete from The Ohio State University, he actually suffered a heat exhaustion when he was with the Minnesota Vikings. And one of my business partners, Winfield Burnett, was a teammate of his and a very good friend of Corey's, was actually there that day this incident happened. So from that tragic incident, you know, from that, what they did was they put together, his wife did, which was a great lady, and she started the Corey Stringer Institute looking at ways to solve these overheating, over-indexed athletes, you know, from dying, you know. But even more so on top of that, you know, brain damage, right, in certain you know, degrees. So there's so much that goes into it that, you know, we think a cooling towel or a bucket of ice or extra drink of water. But, you know, when you and I played, you know, the 90s and the early 2000s, we got one drink. That was it. I mean, Rich Rodriguez wasn't giving us popsicles. So I walked onto the field at West Virginia University, and I saw him over there handing out popsicles at Michigan, and I just laughed. I couldn't believe it. I know, you know, you're over there with Luke Fickell and those guys. I know they, you know, they got plenty of water breaks and Gatorade and electrolytes and, you know, all those things, you know, that are so innovative today. And I think that's the evolution of a better property, a better athlete on the field, you know, because of they're paying attention to their nutrition.
So you guys went out and created portfolio of products. Talk to us a little bit about this hat and this helmet. You say you push a button, you put this helmet on and you're working in a coal mine or you work in construction, you're out in the elements. This hat or helmet is equipped to reduce your core body temperature to a point to where now it makes it safe for you to work in those conditions. Is that right?
Yeah, so you have our entire suite of products. So you have the watch. Our watch tells your temperature, internal temperature, SpO2, heart rate, and then the shirt is collecting that same data. And then in the cloud, there's algorithms that are built in and building being built out to say, okay, if it goes above or below this certain degrees, you know, trigger that event to actually turn the helmet on, the hat on, the wristband, or the cooling vest, whichever one of those cooling products you're wearing, 1 through 4, that is the suite of products that we're looking to sell. And the best thing about this product and product line is President Biden added it to OSHA. So OSHA is now saying you have to be regulated. You have to be in compliance with these heat regulators with your employees or you will be fined. More importantly, lastly, they've also done, they said, okay, you can actually pull this money out of the PPE money that's been allocated. So the face masks, the, all the things that they were buying, these corporations and companies. So you can't say that there's a shortage of cash or there's no cash for this product. There's two things. You can either get on board early and be in compliance and get fined, or you can utilize some of the PPE money that's left over if you have any for allocations. But more importantly, you want to do right by your workers. You want efficient protocols, and you don't want lawsuits that come back in the millions as you can just spend, you know, $20,000 or $50,000 to implement this system, you know, to your workplace, to eradicate workplace injuries.
Well, you mentioned something that I've been talking about here on the show, and that's as a business owner, you have to pay attention to all aspects that touch your business. You just talked about realities of politics. And I've made this statement before, but I think it's worth saying again. I've heard my entire life, don't talk politics, don't talk religion. And I've also made the statement that if you don't talk politics, you're nuts. And the reason why is because if you're a business owner and you don't understand the policies, you don't understand the laws, you don't understand what Congress or the Senate is looking to pass in the realm of a bill, that could have profound impacts on your business or profound impacts on the business you are seeking to start. So here's a business that you have in Jet Fuel Tech, Perry Jeter, that you are now benefiting from some of the bills that's been passed, some of the regulations that's been passed that allows your technology to become easier to obtain and becomes favorable for you to run a company that exists in that realm. Am I right in saying that?
100%, Dr. Baker.
In that case, it's smart to say whatever's going on Capitol Hill, how we can take whatever's been created there and use that for our benefit. Last question here before we go to our station identification for closeout is, if a person, what advice could you give a person that wants to create a tech company? We talked about fundraising earlier, but what advice would you give them as it relates to building out that company, getting to market, and then overall looking to sustain that? Is there any words of wisdom you can impart on our listeners?
Yes, I would say, if I had to speak to my younger self, get more advisors early on, experience in those industries, but then also get passionate support of folks that are new to the industry but have a passionate loved one that may be going through something and, reaching out to some of the stores that are out there. So I would say those would be two key things, but probably the top one would be the advisory piece, just having a mentorship program coming on board, because now you have access to information at your fingertips, right? So whereas when we were, it was totally different, So I would say access to information, that's the biggest thing right now. And, you can create a global business on these phones, right? So I would say utilize those, look at lobbyists, joining those programs, Senate, watching more Revolt TV news, that is particular to our segment, and, watching Cheddar, really diversified model. So shout out to Cheddar, shout out to Revolt. Hope we get an endorsement agreement with both of y'all. So that's what I would say.
Fantastic. And if anyone wants to contact you, look at your products, or even purchase the products, how do they get in contact with Jet Fuel Tech?
LinkedIn. LinkedIn's probably the easiest one. LinkedIn, I'm on LinkedIn as Perry Jr. So LinkedIn would be a really good place to connect.
All right, fantastic. So connect with Perry Jeter. That's J-E-T-E-R, Perry Jeter, on LinkedIn if you want to learn more about Jet Fuel Tech, any of the wearables that they have in their technology. If anyone has any questions regarding their business, how can they grow it through technology? How do they go about fundraising to generate more capital? Please do so. Write the number down. We're on Everyday Live from 2 to 3 o'clock Eastern Time. The phone number is 859-291-2255. And today has been Tech Tuesdays. Thank you so very much for joining us today on the show. Tomorrow we have a great show with Raynon Delgado, who runs our Latino wing of the Business Hospital. And we're going to look at business south of the border. Don't forget to tune in on Worldwide Wednesday here on Doctor's Orders. Perry Jeter, thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate the time and the insight that you provided our listeners.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us. And we're looking forward to continue the same dialogue and seeing you in Dallas here with Beyond the Ball in our partnership.
Absolutely. Really excited about that. Everyone else, continue to enjoy your Tuesday. We'll see you tomorrow at 2 o'clock.
All right, brother. Thank you. Thanks, guys. Mm-hmm. Bye.
Thank you for joining us for Doctor's Orders. You can contact Dr. Baker by phone at 1-855-249-4677, by email at info@drbaker.us. You can learn more on our website at www.drbaker.us. Be sure to tune in every Monday through Friday at 2 p.m. right here on 1320 AM, 103.9 FM, and on www.1320thevoice.com.